It's now time for Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM. He's here to take your questions regarding law and estate planning at 390-1370. And now, here's attorney Brad Wewell.
Good morning, everybody. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad. We are here. This is our 183rd show. It's a lot of shows. And we have three to go this week, next week, and the following week. And then Law Talk with Brad will be going on a extended sabbatical, I guess we'll say, Steve. Snoop here. We've enjoyed it, but it's time for other things. So we are going to be here this week, next week, and the week after that, and then we will be out of here for a good long while. So today's the day. If you've got questions, you better call and get your questions answered. We've got a special guest, Steve Van Winkle. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Brad.
Steve is the Director of Elder Law and Medicaid Services at the Wewell Law Firm, and Steve, in his entire practice with our firm, focuses on the murky, mysterious, complex, and confusing area of Medicaid law and helping elder folks, whoever you are out there. And elder starts about 5 years older than I am, I think.
Yeah, right.
I think I'll keep that.
Well, Brad, you call me the elder lawyer. I am the lawyer that practices elder law. Thank you.
Yes, Steve. But you're also, as we all know, the oldest lawyer in our firm.
Yes.
And so Steve's got about a year and a half on me, folks. We are here, and we are going to bring up some interesting things today. And I got to say that this is serious stuff. This is not what your girlfriend tells you. Your buddy tells you, your hairdresser tells you, your barber tells you, the group of guys you have coffee with, the girls you play cards with, whatever you think elder law is, whatever you think Medicaid planning is almost always wrong because it's based on incorrect and erroneous information. So we've got Steve Van Winkle here, and Steve is going to talk all morning long about the latest, greatest, most important stuff with Medicaid. But we're taking calls, and if you get a call, let me just emphasize, this is the last Saturday for Law Talk with Brad where we're going to deal with Medicaid issues. So if you've got any questions of any kind about Medicaid, preserving assets from a nursing home, making sure the state doesn't take your home, call this morning. Our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. We've got Andy Wewell out there. Andy's an Eagle Scout, junior in high school, great kid. He is getting paid to do this show, and he needs to work. So call 390-1370, 390-1370 with your questions. If you can't call, you can email Steve and I this morning. Our email address is askbrad@wewell.us. That's askbrad@wiewell.us. If you email us, we'll read your question over the air and give you an answer again this morning, too. So this is it. This is the last Saturday Law Talk with Brad is going to be on. We're going to deal with Medicaid issues. So call 390-1370 this morning. We're going to be here till about 10 till 10, and then that's it with any questions you've got regarding Medicaid. So, Steve, let's talk about some things that you brought that you think are important right now.
Sure, Brad. In our current environment and employment situation, I was noticing in this morning's USA Today talking about how many people are going to Social Security. It's up 19% this year.
19%.
19% for the fiscal 2009.
Wow.
That's a bunch. Part of it is that from the elder population, not as many jobs available, so have to take early retirement. That impacts on the long-term care.
Well, I would expect so. So I was planning on working until I'm 65 or 70. All of a sudden, I'm laid off. I'm 60. I'm 62. I'm 63. I'm 64. You know, and I know, and all of our listeners know, that there really is age discrimination out there.
Well, there's some form of it.
And so I can't get the job I had. Maybe I'll take Social Security.
I can't say I've felt it from you yet, but, you know,
well,
Steve.
You know, you stay a little older than me. You stay, you know, be kind.
Yes.
Be kind. So, what are people doing? They're taking Social Security at 62.
They're taking Social Security at 62. They're dipping into their retirement funds. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, one of the things that I'm most concerned about is whether or not they're going to have money for long-term care. And you know what the percentages are on that.
Well, in fact, for our listeners, you can go to our website. Our website, as you may know, is TexasTrustLaw.com. That's TexasTrustLaw.com. And if you go to the library on TexasTrustLaw.com, there's a little link. You click library, and we have 12 articles a month up there. We put a new one up every month and take one off every month. And the one we just put up this month is, couple months ago, let me back up. The one this month is about estate administration. But a couple months ago, we put an article up called Elder Law Elements. It was the July article. It's on the website right now, TexasTrustLaw.com. And if you go to that article, it has some amazing statistics. It says, Steve, that if you're 65 and married, there's a 75% chance that either you or your spouse would need long-term care, 75%. And that the average stay is 2.5 years at a nursing home, and the annual cost, average national average cost, $76,460 a year for just one person.
That can wipe out a nest egg pretty fast.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Plus, you got to worry about, as you well know, and I well know, we're not just shelling out $76,000, $77,000 for the sixth spouse. We've got somebody at home.
Right.
Trying to live off what we've got.
Well, and another thing, when we were coming into the station today, I mentioned one of my great concerns is procrastination.
Mm.
I noticed a figure, Brad.
Let's talk about that later, Steve.
Okay.
No joke there,
you got me there.
All right, so we're going to put this off.
Right. Well, here's a figure that came across my desk is that at age 65, roughly 12% of those at 65 have some form of dementia.
12% of the people 65.
That is hard for me to believe.
Wow.
I'm not saying it's not true, but it is a figure that I have come across more than once.
Okay.
Well, what that means to me and to you is that with advancing dementia, can we do any more planning?
All right, so tell me what you mean by can we do any more planning? So mom, dad, me, somebody has drifted across the invisible line to where now they really don't understand the impact of legal planning on their lives.
Right.
Are you telling me that if I haven't done the planning, I can't sign? I can still sign my name. I may not know what I'm signing. Can I do that?
Well, physically you could do it, but no, you can't.
Wow.
And that's one of our major problems is that this is a matter that sort of comes up from behind us. It doesn't hit us square in the face typically.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of, as you know, Brad, in all areas of estate planning, there is a tendency for people to delay.
Right. These aren't pleasant topics.
These aren't pleasant topics, but when you have children of the elderly watching mom or dad, they're not quite sure of what's happening, and that's one of the big issues.
Mm. So if you don't do the planning, folks, while your loved one has mental competence, then, Steve, what you're saying is the door is going to be closed to opportunities that the family may have to save a lot of money from the nursing home and from the state of Texas.
That's right. And this issue of dementia, which is probably one of the biggest issues that I have to deal with in planning, at age 80, there's a figure that says 20 to 30% of the population has some form of dementia.
Wow. Okay. And I guess it just gets worse and worse the older you get.
It just gets worse and worse. When we think about planning, you know, we're talking about two things. One is incapacity or when we can't take care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the what I call death planning.
Sure, sure.
But most of the crucial stuff in what I deal with is the incapacity planning.
Right, right. Well, It's the part that affects people the most, because death planning is something I'm going to do for them.
Right.
And capacity planning is something I'm going to do for me. And as much as I love everybody out there, my family, my kids, my wife, the way God made me, I'm a little always more concerned about me than I am them. And so let's focus on this. Now, Steve, and let me just remind our callers. Our call-in number this morning is 390-1370, 390-1370. If you've got a question about Medicaid planning, you better call today, because Steve is here today. This is the third to last show, a Law Talk with Brad. So call this morning if you want to get an answer to your question that's maybe been bugging you or vexing you or concerning you. Steve, we've talked about it here before, but you can't talk about it enough. People say, well, you know, I don't know what the big deal is. I've got Medicare. Now, isn't Medicare going to pay all these expenses for me?
Unfortunately not. Medicare is, for the most part, not about long-term care planning.
Okay.
Medicare is what you're basically under our law entitled to. Medicaid is based on your needs, your financial situation. And Medicare is only going to cover about 20 days if you've been in the hospital.
20 days in a nursing home. And you've got to have jumped through certain hoops before they'll even pay for that 20 days.
Sure. You have to be in that hospital at least 3 days. And you have to have the nursing home for rehab. And so there are some hoops. And then you have to be making some progress.
Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, the way I look at Medicare, and I think this is the best way to look at it, Medicare is doctor insurance. It pays your doctor. Okay? If you're in a real full-dress hospital, it'll pay for your hospital. There's a small supplemented prescription drug benefit, but other than that, that's all Medicare is going to pay. Medicaid is the program, Steve, as you mentioned, where you need continual care.
Right.
And we're going to have to put you – we can't care for you at home, as a vast majority of people understand, because it's just too expensive to care for people at home.
Right. Some of our listeners will know that, Medicare pays for more than just the first 20 days. Well, yes, the next 80 days you pay $133.50 out of your own pocket.
Each day.
Each day.
Right. All right. And then after 100 days, there's absolute zero.
Right.
All right, we got a call on line one from Mary. Mary, Brad, we will. Law Talk with Brad. What can we help you with?
Hey, Brad, I just have a quick question. My sister moved into my house with me, and, of course, she said that she will be taking care of me if something happens. But she wants to know how we could get the house in both names, so if I become incapacitated, or have to go into a nursing home, the kids can't come in and just kick her out.
Mm. See?
Well, that's an interesting question. What I would like to know, or actually would be, what are the circumstances for your sister? But I will say this, that if she's in there, the kids aren't going to be able to kick her out right away or anything like that. I mean, if you go into a nursing home, that's still your homestead.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I guess what you're concerned is, and what she's concerned about, is you lose mental competence. She's caring for you. The kids decide, we don't like Aunt Sally, or we're ready to sell the house and move on down the road, and she's going to be left high and dry. Let me ask you a question. Is your plan, Mary, that if something happens to you, let's say that she can no longer care for you, or you just flat pass away, is it your intention that she stay in your house the rest of her life too?
Yes, she is the beneficiary of the house in my will.
All right. Steve, let's talk then about ladybird deeds.
Yes. What Brad is referring to are these life estate deeds. And and what would happen is that, and I'm just sort of cutting to the chase, is that upon your death, is that your sister, if she had that interest in the ladybird deed, would own the house.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, while you are still living, you have full right to the house and full right to do anything you want to do with it.
Right.
What if I'm let's say I have Alzheimer's and I'm not capable. That I think is her main concern.
Sure.
And it's one of those things, oh, it'll never happen, but you just never know that.
Well, another thing.
I can't make decisions. Would it be advisable to put the house in a trust, and the trust own the house, and both of us are trustees?
Yes, normally not, because you have other protections. And so let me tell you that your children will not be able to transfer that house while you're alive unless you've already given them permission to do so.
Uh-huh.
For example, through a power of attorney or something mm-hmm. like that.
Now, I've got an idea, though, that may work, because what we're a little concerned about, this is something that is always an underlying current in Medicaid planning, Mary, is if you give your sister any of that house, you've made a transfer to her that could cause some penalty later. What you may want to think about doing is getting your sister a 20-year lease, something like that,
uh-huh.
where she's guaranteed she can live there the next 20 years. Well, you're not going to live 20 years, and she's not going to live 20 years,
mm-hmm.
more than likely. And so if there's a written lease that's that it's in force, then your kids couldn't kick her out either because she's there under this lease. Now, she'd have to mm-hmm. pay a nominal amount of rent. Wouldn't have to be a lot. I mean, whatever you two would agree upon probably, in fact, would work. But that's another way, or do a 30-year lease. I don't know. Now, the problem with that is you and your sister fall out. And yeah, hello. That's hard to believe that girls could ever fight, but it does occasionally happen. Now she's there and you can't get her out. All right, so it's kind of a double-edged sword. The trust doesn't really work in Medicaid planning for homes because where is it?
Would a trust work if, let's say that she wanted to put money into the house, but she didn't want to put it into the house unless her name was also on the house?
Well, if there's
let's say we wanted to add on an addition.
Yes.
to Mary, the house, another bedroom or whatever. And she was going to pay for it.
Mary, there are
But she doesn't want to pay for it unless she's assured that her name is on the house or, nobody could take that particular part away from her.
I would say that there are multiple ways of handling this. And in my mind, this is not an alarming problem.
I'm unable to hear.
Yeah, okay. There are multiple ways that you could handle this. And if you, for example, came in, we would go over all of the relationships, all of the issues, and probably be able to give you two or three ways that you could solve this issue for you, this problem for you.
So the answer, Mary, is that there are ways to handle this. It just depends on which is the best one for you and for her. Okay, so
mm-hmm. okay.
And we're not going to be able to solve it all today. But what I'd suggest is you can call Steve. There is a consultation fee with Steve. The first visit is $350. But if you do some planning, that fee goes against whatever planning you may do. You can call mm-hmm. him at the We Will Law Firm.
Okay.
The number there is 480-8828, 480-8828.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. And it's Steve that I talked to,
Steve,
right?
Talk yes. to Steve, and they'll get you set up on his calendar.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mary. Have a great weekend. Bye. Okay, bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right, we're going to take a break. We've got Steve Van Winkle. Let me just go over this one more time. This is the last Saturday of Law Talk with Brad that we're going to have Steve on. We've got three shows left. This is the one of those three. If you want to talk about Medicaid planning, if you've got any questions out there that you want to get answered, today is the day. Our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. All our phone lines are open, and we'll see you on this side of the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
All right, folks. Good to be back. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad. We are talking about elder law today, Medicaid planning today. Today is the last day we're going to talk about this. Again, we're down to our last three shows, and you can call us this morning at 390-1370, 390-1370 with your questions. We've got Steve Van Winkle here. Steve is Director of Elder Law and Medicaid at the We Will Law Firm, and he is here to talk about Medicaid. So call us with your questions. And, Steve, we had Mary on the line right before the break. Mary was talking about her house and wanting her sister to move in. And interesting question, and we appreciate the call. But what about houses? There's a two things that I seem to hear from folks. One is they can't take the house if you end up on Medicaid, and we'll deal with that first. The second one is first thing you need to do is to sell the house.
Okay? Oh yes.
So let's deal with the question: can the state of Texas take somebody's house if they end up on Medicaid?
No, that's the short answer.
Okay. All right.
What people are usually worried about is what they've heard about. It's called estate recovery.
Okay.
And sometimes they think, well, you know, my husband's living in the house. I'm going to be in the nursing home. Will they take my house when I die? Not if he's in the house, for example. But basically what it's about is the state trying to recoup the monies that it has spent for you mm-hmm. while you're on Medicaid.
Sure. Can't blame them.
No. However, there are, as good and conscientious lawyers, we think about these things.
We look for loopholes.
Yeah, that's what some people call them. But one of the first things that I would say is that if a loved one passes away that's been on Medicaid, don't automatically assume that the state has the right to recover monies from that situation.
Okay.
For example, let me give you an example, Brad. If there was an application for Medicaid before March 1 of 2005, mm-hmm. they won't be entitled to recoup.
Okay.
I've seen letters where the state has sent, presumably by air, and the family thought that they were going to recoup. Another thing is I've already mentioned, like, if your spouse is in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Or what about if there is an unmarried adult child or a disabled child?
Mm-hmm.
Those are some exceptions.
Loopholes. Should use that term, should I?
You're right. But also, you know, you mentioned the Ladybird Deed, which has been used around the country and still is being used, where basically what that deed takes the house out of the estate upon the death.
All right, so Steve, you paint kind of an interesting picture, but I want to kind of be a little more precise. So if I end up on Medicaid and state's paid my bills and I die and Cindy's still in the house, they can't take the house from her. But when she dies, assuming that nobody in our family has done the kind of planning that we should have done, at that point, assuming all our kids are healthy and rocking right along, state of Texas, can they get it?
Actually, under the current state of the law in Texas, the answer, again, would be no. Because when you died, what they have is that you were in the nursing home. She's at the house. When you died, they have a claim against the house. She's an exception to that claim. So the claim
sure.
goes away. There's not a lien. We're
okay.
called a claim state.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean that won't change.
So so the first spouse is on Medicaid. They die. That claim dies with them.
Right.
As long as they're survived by a surviving spouse. Oh, that's good.
That's
all
in
right.
the house.
Good.
That's right. And so that's a... It's an important distinction that sometimes people miss. Also, people will say, well, listen, what if I go into the nursing home and there's nobody in the house? What happens to the house? Typically, what we do is that we file a notice called an intent to return. And sometimes clients will say, but there is no way I can return. And I'll tell them, well, but don't you want to? And or the other,
really, my experience with older people is in the nursing home, they all want to go home.
Oh, absolutely. And the state allows that notice. But there's another thing is that if we're going to be on hospice or in hospice, most people would rather be at home if they have hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually resonates with people because they want to be honest with the state, and we do too.
Mm-hmm.
So that house could be sitting there, and it's exempt from anything happening
Now, the concern I'd have in that situation, Steve, is that nice that Granny is in the nursing home. The house is sitting there vacant. We've still got property taxes we got to pay. We still got, or, although we don't necessarily have to pay property taxes.
Right. Well, and we don't normally really want it vacant either.
Right. So my question is, can the family then rent it out?
They can. Okay. But, I mean, it's going to be income that the grandma, we'll call her grandma,
right?
She would be receiving, and it would count in her means test, what we call a means test. Is she making too much or not enough money? But I will tell our listeners there are two basic tests, there's three primary tests about Medicaid and nursing homes. Do I have to have medical care, medical necessity it's called? How much money can I have? $2,000 countable, and the house not counted. That's why you don't want to sell the house, because if you sell the house, let's say you were down to $2,000, and you sold the house for $100, all of a sudden you have $102,000, whereas if you still had the house, you would qualify for Medicaid.
Well, and it seems like that's, for some reason, that's what people do.
Well, it's a panic mode, Brad, and I can't say that I blame them, but this is what happens is that you have mom and dad that are in the home. Children are either live in the city or out of the state, and then all of a sudden everybody, it dawns on them, mom and dad need this care that you mentioned the national average of over $70,000. It's typically not that in the state of Texas, but it depends on where you live in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. Typically, nursing home will run around $4,500. It's a little cheaper than rural areas, but that's still a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so that panic mode is what hits and causes people to worry.
All right. So lots of things with houses. Can somebody, let's say we're out here at the station here is at the corner of Westlake Drive and or Westlake High Drive and 360. A lot of nice houses out here. Does any size house allow me to exempt it from my list of assets?
No.
Okay.
But actually, you can have up to, under present law, up to $500,000 in equity in the house.
Okay.
And, you know, in some areas of town, it's not that hard to go over that. Congress allowed the states to go up to $750,000, but Texas hasn't opted for that option.
Okay. So let's talk about let me give our call-in number again. Our call-in number is 390-1370, 390-1370. Let's talk about the amount of money, Steve, that people can have, single and married folks, and qualify for Medicaid.
The figure I mentioned a minute ago for single folks, their countable resources can only be $2,000.
So you can have a house, like a car,
right?
A few other little things,
right?
$2,000,
right?
Wow. And what about married people?
Well, it's a different test. If you got one that's at home and one that goes in, the one that's in home may be able to keep up to $110,000, depending on how much the total estate is.
Okay, now that's plus a house, plus a car,
right?
A few other things.
For example, if you had $200,000 in assets besides the house and car, then the one that would be at home would be able to keep $100,000.
Okay.
Actually, Brad, if the income is low enough and there were $200,000 or $300,000, there is a possibility you'd be able to keep it all, depending on how low that income might be.
All right. So, in the right set of circumstances, for married couples, if everything works out just right and they don't have a lot of income, and we'll talk about what a lot of income is here in just a second, then a married couple may be able to keep more than $110,000 and still qualify the sick spouse for Medicaid.
Yes, in some circumstances. And that's why I would tell our listeners, never assume that you've got the full picture. So many people will go to the internet or talk to their neighbors.
Right.
And their neighbors are just going to talk about what they understand. Mm-hmm. But so often the circumstances are so much greater.
Right. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this is a highly complex area of the law. This is not something that you want to try at home. There are rules out there. We call them coffee shop and beauty shop rules, and they are almost always going to be wrong. And if you step into a trap that somebody laid, and they laid it with all good intentions, then you can have a very, very serious situation that you never intended. So let's talk about how much income somebody can have, Steve, and what they can't exceed, I guess would be a better way to put it, and qualify for Medicaid.
In Texas, the rule is $2,022, but in Texas, and we're called a cap state, means there's a cap.
So $2,022 a month.
Right. But
okay.
There are we can do what's called a qualified income trust or a Miller trust.
Okay.
And those are accepted in Texas. And so the income is not something I worry that much about because there are ways to be able to work with that.
All right. So if you let's talk about how that works. So if somebody comes in, they've got very few assets, but they've got about a $5,000 a month income. They would otherwise qualify. They don't have very much, but again, they've got this big income. A Miller Trust, exactly what does that do?
Well, first let me say, Brad, that if they had $5,000 in income, they would be paying. They would be doing private pay anyway.
Okay, good point.
But let's say it's $3,500
okay.
or $3,000. What the Miller Trust does is that the money, the income, not the assets, but the income goes into that trust, and then it goes out according to law. Some of the Medicare premiums get paid. Some of the unreimbursed medical bills can get paid, and most of it gets applied to the nursing home.
Okay, so Miller Trusts are out there. We talked about Miller Trust today, Steve. We talked about Lady Bird Deeds today. We're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about long-term care insurance and how that works. And if we get some time, we'll talk about reverse mortgages. Our call number is 390-1370, 390-1370. We got one 10-minute segment left of the show. All our phone lines are open. If you've got a call, you got a question, call now, 390-1370. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
All right. Welcome back. This is Law Talk with Brad. This is Brad Wewell. Just want to remind you about the Wewell Law Firm. We are an estate planning law firm. We just do that. We do wills and trusts. We do charitable planning. We do business planning, so for buy, sells, and things like that. We do a lot of asset protection planning, folks. We have really developed a good niche there, and we help people protect their assets from being taken from them if they get sued. We do a lot of special need planning where a family has a child that's perhaps developmentally disabled, some other issues, mental illness, drug issues. We can help with that. We're talking about elder law right now. We do probate, and we do pet planning. So we do it all regarding this area. We've got three offices. We've got an office in Austin at 1601 Rio Grande. We have an office in Georgetown at 1618 Williams Drive between I-35 and Sun City. And we have an office now in the Highland Lakes area near Marble Falls and Horseshoe Bay at 6400 Ranch to Market Road, 2147. So we're right in downtown Horseshoe Bay. Anyway, if we could help you, we've got an office number is 480-8828, 480-8828. First meeting at our office, unless it's a Medicaid consultation, is complimentary. But all meetings at our office are by appointment only. So give us a call if we can help you. We have a great website, TexasTrustLaw.com, where you can go and read about our firm, check out our library. We've been talking about one of the articles in our library this morning, an article on elder law elements. So go to TexasTrustLaw.com, click on the library, click on elder law elements, read more about Medicaid planning. Steve, as we were going to the break, you told me there was something you wanted to make sure that we talked about. What was that?
That had to do with gifting issues, Brad. You know, right before the break, we talked about that $2,000 countable resources. Mm-hmm. And so the natural thing that comes to many people is, whoa, I better get rid of some of this stuff.
Right, right.
And what comes natural may not be the best thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would tell our listeners, the law has a tendency to change pretty quickly in this area. Last month, the gifting penalty changed. And what I mean by that is that for every $130 and some change that you give away, you might be penalized one day of long-term care.
Wow.
And so if you gave away $100,000 or $50,000, just divide it by that $130 figure, and you'll see how long you will not be able to get any Medicaid.
So you can really create a huge problem.
You can. Now, you know, we sort of talked about procrastination and some of those things. The Congress passed a law about 3 years ago that said what's going to happen is that we're going to look at your finances for 5 years. It's called the look-back period.
Mm-hmm.
And during those 5 years, we're going to see what you have done and what you have transferred. And that, therefore, we're going to look to see if those gifts were done. Well, if you're thinking about it, say, okay, well, let's do it longer than 5 years. And if we do it far enough back, if we make transfers far enough back or thinking far enough in advance, you won't have any penalty. But then that raises all sorts of new issues. Where do we put that money? Do we put it in a trust? Who's the trustee? What kind of trust?
Are the kids going to spend all the money I'm giving them?
Are they going to spend all the money I'm going to give them? Should I gift it? Should I trust it? What should
right.
I do?
Do I give it to all of them or just the good one?
Right. Of course, you and I are the good ones. But,
of course.
but anyway, in fact, that brings up another point, Brad, is that I know you do this and I know I do this, is that I heard you say the other day, we're amateur sociologists.
Right.
And sometimes I think we're a little bit better than that.
I think we are, too.
Because we are looking at family dynamics. And Mary, who called earlier, that would be one of the things that I would want to inquire about.
Mm-hmm.
Family dynamics. What will work best for you? Not, one size does not fit all.
Right. Right. And again, her relationship with her kids' relationship with her relationship with her sister. I mean, this is not, folks, I think a lot of times people look at, well, let's go to LegalZoom or let's do something, because it's all about putting black ink on white paper. Let me tell you, that is just a fraction of estate planning and elder law planning. It's knowing all kinds of things about what the ramifications of all this is.
Right, and I know that when you do trust planning, for example, you spend a lot of time getting to know the family dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how much more sometimes are the family dynamics when we know that mom and dad is fading or has faded?
Right.
And so what are we going to do? And so I just want our listeners to know that don't do gifting without an elder lawyer who helps you.
Don't do any of this without an elder lawyer.
Absolutely.
I mean, again, you're going to hear so much stuff out there, ladies and gentlemen, that is wrong and well-meaning, but wrong. And so you can call Steve Van Winkle. He'll be happy to set you up the consultation, and he can go over what your needs are, what your situation is, and prescribe a remedy, all right? So don't do the over-the-counter stuff. If you've got cancer, you don't go buy a bottle of Advil and think of that's going to solve the problem. That's not the answer. You need a specialist. You need somebody who can look into it. Steve Van Winkle is an excellent elder lawyer, and I'm sure can help you with that. All right, Stoop just gave us a three-minute warning. So this is a three-minute warning on the third-to-last show. So, Steve, thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brad. I've enjoyed the ride.
Well, it's been great. It sure has been great. You can always go to TexasTrustLaw.com. Again, check out the library for articles on this. You can go to our video library. We've got 81 two-minute videos on different estate planning topics. You can also go to the radio show link and hear old shows. Today is ACL is in town. We've got all kinds of festivals in town. You know, we've been praying for rain for so long, and the Lord is faithful to provide. I hope hopefully it will rain, but, you know, dang, it's going to rain on a lot of people. So, Lord, I know that you've got a good sense of humor. But sometimes it's a little inscrutable. Anyway, we're happy for the rain if it comes, I suppose. But we want everybody to be careful out there, too. If you have any issues, call the We Will Offer. We can always help you. This is Saturday. Tomorrow is Sunday. We can help you on this side of life. We cannot help you on that side of life. So get your little bottom out of bed and go to church. You'll be better for it. We'll all be a lot better for it. Pray for the country. And go ahead and throw one in for us, too. So thank you very much. See you next week. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad.
Tune in next week for another edition of Law Talk with Brad.